I'm Liza.
I'm Riss.
And this is the Little Sleep
Much Reading Podcast.
And finally, from so little sleeping and so much reading, his brain dried up and he went completely out of his mind.
So I just wanted to say some quick literary news on this past book release Tuesday that was actually for you guys last week, which would be Tuesday the 21st. A whole bunch of books were released, as happens, one of which was Stephen King's new collection of short stories, which holds a sequel to Cujo in it, so that's very exciting. Good for you, Mr. King. Yeah, that was like the big thing that I wanted to say, because I think it is exciting, and I think that hopefully, you know, we have a lot of new horror being released this summer, and I'm really hoping that Stephen King releasing, I think it's called You Like It Darker, I hope that him releasing this now kind of like jumpstarts horror season a lot earlier, and people are excited for all the new releases that are going to come out. Paul Tremblay, I think Josh Malerman's book is coming out soon. Gretchen Felker Martin has a book coming out soon. T. King Fisher has one, I think, coming out in August. Riley Sager has a new book coming out. Yeah, tons of new releases are happening. Tons to be excited about. Stephen Graham Jones is releasing a new one. I know Darcy Coates just released one, but I feel like there's another one coming, but it might not be until October. Either way, tons of fun things happening, and yeah, I hope everyone is excited for that, because I am. Hi, ladies and germs. So our schedules didn't match up this week, so this is going to sound a little bit weird. There's gonna be, like, no conversation between me and Liza, because we have to record these at separate times and then splice them together, but just know that we love each other and we're with each other in spirit. And so I'm gonna let Liza go first. She'll get into hers and then I will dip into mine, so I will be right back after this Liza talk.
Amazon Prime has this new thing where you can, like, if you're a Prime member, you can kind of like borrow books on your Kindle, and they're Amazon Prime originals. So they're not stuff that you would obviously get in a collection in the store or what have you. And they're also, and you can't get like paper copies. And they're also all short stories from what I can tell. I'm not entirely sure if that's the case. I haven't looked deep enough into it. But I downloaded one collection, which I might do for next week. But I might not. But the collection I did for this week was a collection of 6 short stories for what they call the Creature Feature Collection. Each of them was a different author. So we have Joe Hill, Grady Hendrix, Josh Malerman, Paul Tremblay, Jason Mott, and Chandler Baker. And it seems like they were all given the same prompt, which was just to write a short story about a creature. And I'm also curious to know if they were all given also some prompt about COVID, because I'm pretty sure all of them, or at least 4 of them, but maybe all 6, had some weird kind of like unnecessary mention of COVID. And so I'm like, either these were written right at the height of /right after quarantine, or they just it was part of the prompt. I don't know. The other thing I will just say before I get into it was, obviously, it's really cool that it was Joe Hill, Grady Hendrix, Josh Malerman, and Paul Tremblay, because they're, like, arguably some of the biggest authors writing in horror today. I did find it weird that there was only one person of color, which is Jason Mott, and then only one woman, which is Chandler Baker. I'm not super familiar with Chandler Baker's work. It seems that she writes thrillers, which is cool. And this would have kind of been, I guess, my introduction. Oh, she writes romance novels too, which is kind of interesting, perhaps. But she wrote, like, The Whisper Network, which was a Reese's book club. And then, of course, Jason Mott had that huge book a few years ago. I think it even won kind of some huge prize. Hell of a book. I can't exactly remember what it won. Anyway, I thought it was a little weird that it was mostly white guys that are already super popular. But that being said, that's also maybe how you get people to want to read the collection. I don't know. That was just something I was thinking about. The other thing that's kind of cool, again, not Spawns. I'm not trying to hype up Amazon. We know Jeff Bezos is bad news, but I do enjoy my Kindle and reading on my Kindle. The other thing that's cool is they did have audio that accompanied the short stories, which was pretty fun. They're all quite short, some longer than others. And yeah, I guess I'll just get into talking about them a little bit, because it's short stories, and mine specifically is a more of like an anthology. It's not a one person. I'm not doing a rating scale because it wouldn't necessarily be fair. I have trouble deciding which one is my favorite. They were all actually really fun. Paul Tremblay's was really cool, and it was like maybe the most clever. And then Josh Malerman's was the scariest. So Paul Tremblay's was about like, I get the vibe too that his took place in some sort of alternate, I mean, they all obviously take place in alternate reality because there's monsters in all of them. But it was not quite dystopian, but you know when authors write something where it's like something clearly must have happened in the past that didn't happen in our past, and it changes the trajectory of things. So even though it still has COVID as like this kind of random backdrop, it would seem that climate change is perhaps more far advanced in the world Paul Tremblay has created for In Bloom than it is for us. And the story basically focuses on these kind of like toxic algae blooms, which is a real thing, and they are a real scary thing. And I think it fits in with too, like this idea of like the cordyceps being so popular right now and eco horror being so popular. So it's a toxic algae bloom related monster, and it sort of has a story within a story, which, as we know from my life experiences, is one of my favorite things in the world. Grady Hendrix, I don't know if I just have beef with Grady Hendrix, because I've actually never really loved anything I've read of his and Joe Hill's were felt like they were trying to do something a little bit more psychological, in relation to the COVID aspect of things. And it was like a cool, like, aha moment in Grady Hendrix with that. And his is called The Ankle Snatcher, by the way. So it's a classic boogeyman monster under your bed type of thing. And his was definitely psychological. I don't want to spoil it because they're actually pretty fun. Like, I would suggest reading all of these, especially because they're so quick, or at least listening to all of them. And his is the shortest. And it was good. So it's like, if you want to read this collection, you could maybe start with the Grady Hendrix. The Joe Hill, I love that man. We've said it once, I'll say it 1,000 times. I think his writing is superb. The story is super weird, super gross, freaked me out. And he's also had like a weird psychological aspect to it, whereas you don't know if the creature's actually real or if it's in his head or sort of what's going on. His is called The Pram, and that kind of gives you a sneak peek as to what this one might be about. It also takes place in rural Maine, so shout out to Stephen King. Joe Hill was obviously raised there, too, because of Stephen King, but it's always fun to see that little Maine shout out. Jason Motz had the best voice, hands down. It was like a weird Southern Gothic vibe to it that I really liked. His is called Best of Luck. And it was super freaky. It was another one of those where you're still like, in a good way, you're kind of confused about what's going on, if that makes sense. And that's honestly often my favorite kind of story. But yeah, it's like this icky Western Southern Gothic, and it's like these two guys, I don't know, it's super weird. The creature aspect of it feels much more human in this one, which I think is really interesting also. So we love to see that. Like I said, the Josh Malerman one is maybe my favorite. I don't know. Obviously, I love the Joe Hill. I liked the Grady Hendrix. I liked, you know, the Paul Tremblay was really good. But the Josh Malerman one, I was very pleasantly surprised. So this would have been my first encounter with Josh Malerman. And I'm definitely going to read more of his stuff. I think one of the ones I wanted to read was the one about the pig. Marissa will know what I'm talking about. It's Pearl, it's called, or sometimes it has like a different name. I think it's like published a different name, whether it's in the US or in the States. Anyway, his was also from the perspective of a teenage girl, or like a young adult girl, which I thought he did incredibly well. I remember one of my qualms with Grady Hendrix whenever I read what's the famous one, My Best Friend's Exorcism, I was like, I don't love this grown man writing from the perspective of a teenage girl. It's something that's really honestly quite hard to do. But I thought Josh Malerman ate the house down, and his, I mean, obviously you might say that Grady Hendrix is the most classic creature feature because it's literally the boogeyman, but the monster in Josh Malerman's is just such a monster. It's so freaky. It's got like a, almost like, I don't want to spoil anything, but it's like a little goblin vibe to it. I was really weirded out by it. And what was I saying? Where was I going with that? Oh, it has like a missing 411 vibe, which I also am very into, like missing in the National Forest type beat. And it was also just very clever. The storytelling was really well done. Like I said, the voice was good. And I think his writing is great. I remember being like, honestly, I really liked Paul Tremblay's writing too, and Jason Mott. Like, it was fun to read all these authors that I had never encountered before, because the only person I'm familiar with was, I mean, I'm familiar with all of them, but the only person I'd read was Joe Hill and Grady Hendrix. So this was quite cool. And then the last one was also super weird in a good way, but that was Chandler Baker's Big Bad. And it's about, it's like a really like tense sort of family narrative. And it's almost like a, that type of horror movie that kind of takes place in one night type of thing. So you're just like really tense the whole time because you obviously know something horrible is going to happen. And this one's obviously based on the big bad wolf, if you could not tell by the title. So there is a wolf aspect to it, but I'll leave it up to you to decide sort of what's actually going on there. Now that I realize that this is after the big bad wolf and Grady Hendrix's is after the boogeyman, I wonder if all of them are... Okay, hear me out. Boogeyman, big bad wolf. Paul Tremblay's could be the creature from the Black Lagoon. Josh Mallerman's is giving a... Who's that freaky guy under the bridge? Like, it's not the Billy... I guess kind of Billy Goat's gruff type of thing. It's also giving, like, a Rumpelstiltskin vibe. And then Jason Mott... It definitely could have something to do with Leprechaun type T. But I'm trying to figure out what Joe Hill's would be. The pram... Spoiler alert, it's a baby. There's a freaky baby. And there's also a weird cult vibe in Joe Hill's that I very much loved. Marissa and I both love a cult thing that happens. But I don't know what urban legend it would be based off of. But now I'm like, okay, were they given a prompt where they said creature feature, urban legend, horror, and COVID? Also, I can only really remember COVID being, like, starkly mentioned in Paul Tremblay, Joe Hill, and Grady Hendrix, but I feel like it was mentioned, it was a throwaway line maybe in the other ones. And let me just say this, I also don't really like books that try to bring COVID into it because it still feels like too soon, and I just don't really, I think it cheapens it sometimes. So like it sort of made sense for Grady Hendrix's and Joe Hill's to an extent, but for example, the Paul Tremblay, like it didn't need to be in there at all. And the fact that I can't even remember it in the other three, sort of speaks volumes. But yeah, now I'm like, what's going on? I wish there was more information about the Creature Feature Collection because, or like, I know they just did it for fun. That sounds like what this whole bit was more than anything. But I always am curious with these short story collections, especially when they have these, you know, sort of prolific, really well-known authors. Like, what prompt did you give them? And why did you give them that prompt? Because it reminds me sort of the Jordan Peele Out There Screaming, where he gave them not really specific parameters, but he gave them this sort of jumping off point, and then they were all so different, which I think was really cool. And this one, you know, they're all so different because all six of these writers are wildly different writers, but like they were all very similar in a really interesting way. So I don't know, that's just the type of thing I think about as a writerly, readerly person. But yeah, this was a lot of fun. I would say if you have Amazon Prime, you don't even need to have a Kindle. If you have Amazon Prime, just download it on your Kindle Cloud Reader. You could read one a day. You could read all of them in a day. You could space it out over however long you want whenever you just kind of want to read a short story. But they're pretty fun. And I'll be interested to see if I end up reading the other collection for next week or if I end up reading something else here on my bookshelf. But yeah, that's that on that. This is kind of a weird way to go about it this week. We weren't able to meet up in person, so I'm just like recording this for Missa to merge with hers, so I feel kind of awkward about it, but that's fine. And we'll see you. I'll let I think I know what next week's theme is, but I'm also don't know if I actually know what it is. I think it's weird week, but I'm not sure, so I'll let Marissa explain what next week is, and we'll see you then.
All right, cool stuff. Thanks, Liza Bean. Yeah, so let's get into it. So I read a collection of short stories that I've had for a very long time that I had to special order in at the store because we didn't have it, of course. It is called There Once Lived a Woman Who Tried to Kill Her Neighbor's Baby. Scary Fairy Tales. And it's by Ludmila. No matter how many times I've heard her name be said, I can't say it, so hold on.
Petrushevskaya.
If you see how this name is spelled, it does not look like it would be pronounced like that. It's Petrushevskaya. Guys. Okay. Either way. Yeah, so it's a collection of short, scary fairy tales by a Russian writer who writes a lot of socially tied work. Are we surprised? I'm pretty sure she is still alive. But she was born in 1938, and she has quite a few different collections, and if you Google her picture on Google, if you Google her picture, she looks very cool in a very pretty hat, and I think she's quite beautiful. So yeah. I did do a little rating scale, even though I don't like doing rating scales for short stories, but let's get into it. So, for readability and interest, I gave it a 7. It wasn't the most gripping thing. And, like, it's funny, because, like, I think back on the stories, and I can't even think of one that I was like, oh, I can't stop reading this. You know what I mean? But I think that because the stories are all pretty much very, very short, it's super easy to just, like, go through it. And I feel like I say that with a lot of short stories, but I love a short chapter. I love a 3-page chapter. Anything that's, like, 10 pages or less, delicious. I love it. That's exactly what I want from my book. Perfect stopping place, but also it makes me feel like I can't stop. So anytime a book has that, a collection of short stories, I'm always going to rate the readability and interest higher. I also think that my interest was pretty high for this book because I had seen it a long time ago. You know, I had to like order it into the store. It felt really special. I've had it on my shelf for a long time. And I definitely think that holds like a lot of weight for a book. So I was pretty excited for that. For language and style, I gave it a 6. Here's my thing. I almost did like a 5 or a 5.5. But here's what I think my problem is. This was translated by, I believe, 2 people. And I feel like when things are translated, it definitely has potential to lose some pretty big things. And I just think, like, about when I was in Berlin for a semester, and I had to take a translation class. And obviously I was taking, like, a German class at the time, but, like, I'm not good at languages, and I'm not fluent in German, and I have really no credentials to be translating anyone's work from German into English or vice versa. But, you know, part of the class was really thinking about different languages and what it means for something to be translated and all that fun stuff. I remember one time we had to pick a poem and translate it into English, a German poem into English. I don't know if it had to be German, but it doesn't matter. A German poem into English. I think we had to start three different ways and then pick our favorite one. And so it became the point where I would Google what a word meant, and it would give me so many different options. It could mean pigeon, it could mean bird, it could mean seagull, it could mean hawk, it could, like, it was very, you know, up to interpretation what a lot of the words were actually supposed to mean. And that's probably mostly because Google and someone who's not fluent in the language, aka me, would never get, like, any kind of context that's missing. And I don't exactly know how to, like, explain this with an English example, but there are just some things that we talk about and we know, like, okay, this is stupid. I will 150,000,000,000% admit that this is stupid, but let's just say someone wrote a poem about the White House. It's just going to be the words White House. And so someone who's translating that into a different language who doesn't have the context of, you know, where the President of the United States lives is going to think about that as just a White House and not realize all the context that comes with it. And that's how that class often felt. And so sometimes when I'm reading, you know, translated work, I just feel like, not, and I'm not saying that these translators don't have the credentials or anything like that. I'm just saying that I just wonder what we're missing from, in this book's instance of this book, the what we're missing that's context for Russia that, you know, if we were Russian reading this book, we would understand or we would automatically know. There was a part, I don't remember exactly what it said, but it was like this boy was drafted into the war and he somehow got out of it. I don't remember why he got out of it. But it like said the reason, it was like, oh, and since he was sick, he did not have to be in the war. He did not have to get drafted or something like that. And so it made me stop and wonder and be like, but did, like, is this a part of the original text? Or did these two translators make the decision to add that in? Because unless you're Russian and you understand, you know, the rules of the Russian draft at that time or whatever, maybe you wouldn't know that, and so they added that in to make it more English friendly. I wonder about that a lot. And so some parts I just felt like were dry and they almost felt translated. You know, sometimes I also feel like translation feels like pieces cut and spliced together. And so I did a little bit feel that. So that's why Language and Style got a 6. Shelf-worthy read again. I gave it a 6. There are a couple stories that I found really, really interesting. There is one that I can't think of the name. Cannot think of the name of right now. But it was... This is another thing. I feel like you miss a lot of cultural significance. And so there was this one where it was like this family had moved to the country and they were very much like taking care of their house and talking about like the people around them who lived also in the country, and they were old and like pretty much like old scary widow women. And I just felt like there was some kind of war context that I wasn't understanding. Like, it's almost like I didn't understand if the house that they, the cabin that they had moved into was theirs, and then they eventually like move into the woods and start like homesteading in the woods because they're waiting for, like, quote, them to come. And it very much felt like a war thing that I, like, wasn't fully getting the context of. Which is okay, because, like, not all writing is for me. But even though I didn't, you know, fully understand exactly what was trying to be done, I do think that that story really stood out to me, and I liked it because it was kind of like the motions of life in a weird way, with a really dark undertone, and also it was a little witchy. So yeah, I liked that story. And I think that there's a couple stories. There's also one about this disease that was really interesting. And I think that one also had a lot to do with, like, I think a lot of her stories are social stories in a way. And I think that there's definitely, like, a lot of things that are just going over my head because I don't I don't know much about Russia or the war or things like that because I used to love history and then I fell out of it. But I bet you Nick would know all this stuff. Either way, doesn't matter. But I think that that's all to say that I think that there are a few stories that I would want to go back and read again. I just don't think I would read the whole collection as a whole like I did this first time. I also think that there's something that, like, if we're saying shelf-worthy / read again, we should also say, would we recommend it to someone? And if so, who? Which, for this, I actually would, but I would definitely recommend it to someone who's into history, who's more socially, historically aware. I feel like something about the nature of it reminded me a lot of Visitation by Jenny Erpenbeck, and so I would recommend people who liked that to read this. I'm gonna keep it on my shelf. I think it's a great addition to my shelf. I'm not sad that I got it. So, yeah, but I did give that a 6. And then plot and characterization, I don't rate those things for little short story collections. I also want to say, I'm recording this on May 22nd, and I think Ludmila's birthday is May 26th, so happy early birthday when I'm recording it, but belated birthday when it comes out. Everyone send your good vibes to her, please, and thank you. I really did like this book. I just wish that so many things didn't really go over my head with it. And I also think that it would be interesting to know more about Russian folklore and fairy tales and see how they match up with this book, because I feel like there was also a lot of, I don't know how to say, there's a lot of influence from those that I also just don't get. So maybe that's my new summer fascination, to look that up, maybe learn more about Russian fairy tales. That might be pretty cool. So yeah, that's what I have to say about that. So we are in fact going to do weird fiction next week. I'm going to read, let me just see who this is by, because I can't remember. I'm going to read a book that came out last year. It's called Mayfly by C.J. I'm so sorry. I'm going to butcher this name too. Lead? C.J. Lead? That's my guess. from what I know about it, I think it's a slasher And I'm pretty sure that it has something to do with Disneyland, the California one, And I think, like, the main character is a princess at Disneyland, Either way, I'm excited about this one. I heard mixed reviews on it, but I already have the book, and I want to read it anyways, and I'll be the judge of that. I will figure out if it's good or not. Yeah, so I'm excited for that. I think Liza's excited for that. I think you guys are going to be excited for that. And that's really all she wrote this episode. I guess it'll be a short episode to go hand in hand with short stories. And I love you guys. And I love Liza, and I'll see you all in the next episode.